Next question we have here. Dear Ajahn, what if one does not reach the limiter stages in this life? Is this a waste of a life? Oh, yes. Oh, what a waste. Of course not. You will reach the limiter stage, I guarantee, after you die. When you see the beautiful light, you leave the body, you go towards the light. That's the limiter. So everybody sees the limiter sooner or later. It's better sooner than later. Well, that's a cup of tea. Good eye. I open the door of my heart to see. I'm a disciple of Ajahn Chah. So this is a waste of life. Of course it's not a waste of a life. So remember, don't aim for limiters, aim for peace, for contentment, for a beautiful sense of inner happiness. That's what to aim for. And when you get the courses in place, all these other things just come. If one does get to the stage of limiters, can one go to this stage of limiters again and again? However, I think there are many benefits we get out of meditating. Of course there are. Now obviously when you do it once, it's easier the next time, as long as you see the problem of expectation. Once that's overcome, it's easier to go to the next time, because you know the courses, you know what to do, you know what it's going to be like. So it's usually you get greater skill at getting into these states the more you do it. It's really worthwhile doing it. It really makes you a very good and happy meditator. You just love doing it. After meditating for some time, I get to the inside of me and found that I am not no good. Excellent. I think what you mean is I am no good. I am pretty fake, conceited and self-centered, etc. This has sometimes deterred me from meditating. Please help! Ah, come on! You can't be as bad as Anguli Mara. He had murdered 999 people. He got to become enlightened. So, whoever wrote this, are you as bad as Anguli Mala? Are you as stupid as Chula Pataka, who couldn't even remember Namo Tassa? He kept forgetting it, it was hopeless. He had a brother who was really fed up with him. Are you as bad as Amba Pali? She was a prostitute. Are you as who's the other sort of scallywags in the time of the Buddha became enlightened? There's heaps of them. And they weren't all sort of great, wonderful, noble people. All sorts of people. And I was lovely saying those stories. Oh, Patachara, she was absolutely crazy. She was as mad as a hatter. She got enlightened. So, if you're not as mad as Patachara, you're not as evil as Anguli Mara, you're not as stupid as Chula Pandika, that you can become enlightened. So you can do that. I am pretty fake, conceited and self-centered, etc. The very fact that you know that means you're wise. The very fact you can write this on a piece of paper means you aren't that conceited. So whoever wrote that, well done. You are on the way. Guaranteed, money back guaranteed by Ajahn Bhatt, that you'll get there. The very fact you got to the inside of you, that was pretty good. A lot of people can't even get that far. So you're going well. Now when you go even to the centre of your feeling being fake and seen and self-centred, you find that's just one way of looking at yourself. There's hundreds of other ways of looking at yourself. All you're looking at are the two bad bricks in your wall. You've got many other beautiful bricks in the wall, but sometimes you don't notice them. But that's why these develop not the fault-finding mind, the appreciative mind, the grateful mind. Just being happy to be who you are. So if you are fake, see how fake you can be. If you are conceited, please see if you can get to your PB of conceitedness. Guinness Book of Records levels, the most conceited person in the whole world. If you are going to do something, I always say, do it to the max. Don't do it half-hearted. That's why I always say that, you know, a good monk should be humble. And I've really taken humility to such a great level. I am the most humble monk in the whole world. In fact, my humility should be acknowledged by an entry into the Guinness Book of Records as the most humble monk, you know. So what do you see? I don't know what she's doing back there anyway. So you are not fake, you're not conceited, you're not self-centered. That's just one way of looking at yourself, and that one way will soon change. So amazing, you're doing very, very well. Keep on meditating, you go deeper, you'll find out all that idea of who you think you are, that is fake. Thinking you're fake, thinking you're conceited and self-centered, now that is fake. And I guarantee that. You go deep inside that, that's not you. And you say, oh, but you don't know who I am. Yes, I know who you are, you're much better than that. I know you better than you know you. What do repetitive dreams mean? It means you've been sleeping too much. Or drinking too much cups of coffee before you go to bed. I keep on dreaming that it is the eve of Chinese New Year. And I forgot to buy flowers for prayers and offering. I certainly hope Pope is not a bad omen. No, it's brilliant. That's a good omen. Beginning of Chinese New Year means you're starting things over again. Letting go of the past. You've not brought any flowers. Brilliant. You've let go of all these traditions and rituals and ceremonies. One of the great refinements is called Silabhata Paramahansa, which is the attachments to rites and rituals. So that is an omen that you're going to become a stream winner, because that's one of the three things you abandon for being a stream winner, the abandonment of rites and rituals. So that not buying flowers for Chinese New Year means that you've transcended that, you've gone beyond that, you've made advances, well done. So I hope it's not a bad omen. No. It's a great omen. Well done. It's a sign you're going to be a new person. Chinese New Year, the stream winner. You've let go of all your attachments to ceremonies and rituals. Brilliant. Do you agree with me, or do you think I'm just making it up? Of course I'm making it up. So why not? You've got the choice to make up whatever you want, so make up something funny. Most compassionate and enlightened, no, you are most compassionate and enlightened emptiness. It's really good, because at the end of the retreat it gets really, really long. How does one block out sound? Hearing seems to be the hardest of the five senses to let go of for me. Even if I tell myself not to disturb the sound, I can hear people coughing or snoring. Even when I am at the sustained attention of the beautiful breath, or even when I get the flashing unstable blue limiters. Does this have anything to do with the way I can set up my mindfulness gatekeeper? How does one set up the mindfulness gatekeeper such that it blocks out the past and future five senses and also allows my mind to progress to jhana and beyond? Okay, now that is a very good question. It is the last of the five senses which disappear, the sense of sound. So it is true that sometimes you have these limiters flashing up and you can sort of hear some sound. The way to overcome that is a little simile which I developed of the screen. If you watch a movie or a TV screen, you will notice that before you turn the screen on, you can see what's above, below, to the left and right of the TV screen. You can even see the shape of the set. But once the TV screen is on, you're watching a movie or something, you'll find your attention goes right into the center of the screen and you just cannot perceive the edges of the screen, let alone what's to the left, right, above and below. The limit of your perception is just inside the boundary of the screen. You don't even see the edges of the screen. I haven't done this experiment. It would be a wonderful psychology experiment to do, to get round screens, diamond-shaped screens, triangle TV screens, and just to see if it makes any difference to the appreciation of the movie or the football match. You probably find out it's exactly the same. So, how does this relate to meditation? How it relates is this: whatever interests you, whatever you center on, fills up the mind, and what was on the edges disappears. So what you do, you keep, say, the beautiful breath, the delightful breath, or the nimitta, you always keep that in the center. The sound is over here somewhere, on the edge. Never put the sound in the center of your screen. If you give it importance, if it's a problem, it actually takes center stage of your screen of consciousness. But if it's there, but it's not important, know, the delightful breath or the mimicry is the most important. That's right in the center. And the sound is over here somewhere. That's all you need to do. It's only a matter of time when the sound falls off your screen. It goes off the radar. It is too far away, you can't notice it anymore. That's actually how the sound disappears. If you try to block it out, make it important, make it a problem, it's the center and it will never go. So keep the other stuff is the most important. Keep the delightful breath or the nimitta, that's the most important. Just keep your attention on that. Yes, you can hear the sound, but it's not in the center. It's over there somewhere. No, it's only a matter of time, it will vanish. When it does vanish, you don't know the time you stopped hearing. You just realize afterwards, well, I couldn't hear anymore. Now, this is not that difficult to do. I often give the simile of two Malaysian disciples in Perth who told me this story, that they were watching the movie one night on TV. It must have been a great movie, because once the movie had finished, one of them went out to go to the toilet, the other one went to have a cup of tea, and it was only when they got up from the sofa they realised there was many things missing in their house. You've got it, a burglar had been into their house while they were watching the TV. And this burglar was so cheeky that right behind them, you know, from the sofa, right behind them, taking things off the shelves right behind them. They were just so busy watching the TV. They didn't hear the burglar at all. And I said, if you can only do that while you're meditating, you look at the bed, so you can't hear the snoring or people coughing. You can do that while watching a movie. Why can't you do that while meditating? What's the difference there? You really enjoy the movie, you're getting sucked into it. So if you can enjoy the nimitta, you really get sucked into it. Yeah, you can sort of feel the sound, but it's not important, it's just anxious. Not that hard to do. So whoever asked that question, brilliant, you're absolutely right. The sound is the last thing which disappears. And this is how to let it disappear. Don't put it on the center of your screen, keep it on the edges. Dear Ajahn, I experience deja vu very often. Should I know anything about it? Is it a warning? No, because deja vu means, now you have an experience and you realize, wow, I've dreamt about that before, or I had experience about that before. But deja vu is you're here and you realize you dreamt about it earlier. Prophecy is where you dream about it now and it actually happens in the future. The trouble with prophecies, sometimes they don't work out the way you expect it. I had a very good friend, he was sitting next to me in the early years of my monastic life. And you know, because you sit next to each other, you become very close friends. And he would always tell me about his two dreams he had as a young man. The first dream he had, and it kept on repeating itself, was of his sister drowning in the family swimming pool. His father was, I think, a major, or no, was a colonel in the US Army, so managed to get plenty of money to actually have a nice house in Pasadena, in Los Angeles, you know, with a nice swimming pool in the back. And he was saying, and this was in the 60s and 70s, he was just lounging by the pool, a young man, just having fun. And this dream started to replay. He had this dream many times, and he started to see it actually happening. And because he had that dream many times, and because he could now predict what would happen next, he acted to prevent his sister drowning, save her life. And it was like an omen. He had the dream many times before, and now it was actually playing out because he could remember what was going to happen next. That was the only reason he could save his sister's life. He said the second time he had one of these dreams was when he went to New Zealand, you know, just like basically a hippie. He was staying in a house with many other young men who were smoking marijuana. You know, just what people did in those days when they were young. And he had a dream that the New Zealand police raided the house and arrested them all. And he said he always kicked himself when that dream actually happened. He had the warning, he got arrested and deported. He said, oh, I should have really taken action on that dream. So he had two dreams which worked out to be perfectly accurate. So when he told me that he had a very clear dream that he would die fleeing from the Viet Cong invading Thailand, being shot in the back of the head by the vehicle. He said, I know this is going to happen. This is exactly the same as those two other dreams which happened. This is going to happen to me. So that was his prophecy. The third prophecy was he's going to get shot in the back of the head with a bullet from the invading communist armies. Of course, you all know that those armies never invaded Thailand. Many people thought they would, but they never did. And instead, he lasted about 4 years, he disrobed. 1 year later, he got married. 1 year later, he died head-on collision in the car. I remember meeting his daughter. They had a daughter by this time. He got killed instantly. His wife was thrown to the window of the car, and she clutched her little baby all the time. Lord, the baby was totally unscathed, but then the mother died. And so the baby, because he was a Buddhist monk, he gave the baby the name Metta. It was about, oh, maybe 20 years later, I was teaching in Los Angeles, and this young girl came up to me and said, how did you know my father? She said, my name's Metta. I saw the daughter, one of my close friends from the time I was a young monk. But his prophecy never worked. His third prophecy, he did die by being shot in the back of the head. And that's a problem with prophecies. You never know which ones are the right ones and which ones are the false ones. You can't trust it until it's too late. So be careful of prophecies. Sometimes you get a prophecy and it's absolutely accurate. It really blows your mind. Wow, that means this person will tell the future. They might do it a second time, but the third time won't work. You can't tell which one is the right one, which one is the false one. That's why it's best not to even bother with it. As with deja vu, so what? So you come to this retreat and you think you've been here before. Well, what does that mean? I have a friend whose soul or spirit will leave her body when she meditates. What is actually happening to her? Sounds scary. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. Now, one of the people who came to my meditation class in prison, he was from Yugoslavia. He said he could do that when he was very young. Still in Yugoslavia, maybe about 4 or 5 years of age, he got very, very, very sick. And so taken to the hospital, they put him under anesthetic, gave him surgery. And during surgery, he floated out of his body and could see what the doctors were doing, and his body opened up, basically, and one of these classic near-death experiences. But he said as he was looking at his body, even though he was only 4 or 5 years of age, with no schooling yet, he knew what was wrong with his body. And he knew the doctors were looking in the wrong place. If they didn't actually see the problem quickly, then he really would die. So he said as a 4 or 5 year old, floating up above his body, he just willed one of the doctors, not look over there, but look over here. And immediately the doctor did that. But hey, this is the problem. Imagine he actually sort of controlled the doctor's mind in a sense, or made that suggestion, and made the doctor look. The doctor thought he just did it by intuition. Saw what the problem was, and saved the boy's life. He said, after, from that time onwards, he would always be able to leave his body, any time he wanted at will. Go floating out. In Buddhism we call it the Manomaya Kaya, the mind made body. And he said he has no problem with that at all, because when I saw him, he was in prison. And he said, I don't mind being in prison. If I want to see a movie, I just go. And they can't stop me. He just lays in his room, they check him out, and he's still there. But his mind made body goes off and watches movies. No problem at all. Another guy I knew, he was Burmese, and he did his meditation when he was a young man, but he became an engineer specializing in air conditioning, and he got a big contract to do air conditioning for, I think it was actually the prison again, over in Darwin, and his wife lived in Perth. And because he was a very jealous man, he would come and check up on his wife every now and again with his astral body. He would just float out of his body, come see what his wife was up to. And he said his wife, I knew her very well, as she's still alive, he died some years ago. His wife would say, I knew when Keith was around. I could actually feel him as my wife. I couldn't see him, but I knew he was around. I keep telling him, Keith, stop checking up on me. I'm faithful. Get back to Darwin. It's really funny just the way these two related. Totally devoted to each other. But one English, one Burmese. And he would come and check up on her that way. That's just what he could do. So sometimes being able to leave your body can be very helpful. You know, you're not allowed to do SMSs or texts here, but if you really want to find out what's going on in the stock market, you can actually go to Wall Street if you want and just get direct information. Just leave your body and off you go. If you get a bit bored, you know, during the meditation, if you're sitting here for 2 hours and just watching the latest Harry Potter movie. Good idea, eh? So it's not dangerous at all. You don't get stuck. You always come back again. So that's all it really is, just leaving your body. But now after a while you think, what's the point of that? You don't get very peaceful. You don't get very enlightened. It's just another way of living in the world. So instead of actually leaving the body that way, you actually stay inside and the body disappears, so you've just got the mind there. Not a mind-made body, but just a mind. During meditation, you see swirls of yellow-orange light converging into a ball of light. It's good, that's a nice limiter. The ball of light changes from shades of yellow-orange into different colours, blue, green, purple. I think you've been going to too many discos. Well, that's okay. Now, sometimes that happens. The colours are not important. Just let it happen. Then travel into a tunnel, very fast into space, cosmos, galaxy, and I can see planets and stars and travel around this universe. Is this normal? Yeah, that's normal. That's all you just par for the course. Enjoy it. That's what's supposed to happen. You're having good fun. Well done. Dear Ajahn Brahm, while meditating, why all of a sudden there is no noise and there is a fear? Is this an imagination? No, it's very good. You're letting go of sound, the sound turns off. Because you're not used to it, you get a bit afraid at first. Ah, what is this? Am I going deaf? Am I going blind? Am I dying? What's happening? It is just the five senses turning off. Well done, enjoy it, you're perfectly safe. It is my job to give you that confidence that you are perfectly safe. Just enjoy it, have fun. You come back afterwards, unfortunately, and having to deal with all the things in the world. Enjoy it while it's there. The other reason why you've been afraid is because when there's no sound, you have got no protective mechanism. The hearing, one of the reasons it's the last of the senses to turn off, because it's our major source of protection. We hear predators by their sound coming through the forest at night. We hear the ghost because of the sound, we can't see them. We hear the burglar, we can't see the burglar, we hear them as the lock starts to turn. It's our hearing, it's our alarm system to protect ourselves. And so when that disappears, sometimes we do feel vulnerable. The people can creep up behind us and do us damage. But don't worry, because everyone on this retreat is keeping 5 precepts. You are perfectly protected. You don't have to protect yourself. I'm protecting each one of you. So you can just let go of sound. No one will come and stab you in the back. They won't steal your meditation because you've got nothing there to steal anyway. So you're perfectly safe. You can just let go of sound. Nothing will happen. Those are the two reasons. First of all, it's not what you're used to. So just, you know, going to a place you haven't been before gives you a sense of fear. But I think it's more likely the fear is because where you've got no control anymore. And you feel vulnerable. But you're perfectly safe. Couple more questions and then we'll do the meditation. Is it better to skip morning meditation altogether or to force yourself to wake up and meditate half-heartedly? Oops. Now the answer is just be kind to yourself. The best thing to do is hide the clock. So I know there's this clock in my room, it's probably in your room as well. Put it in the cupboard, put a towel over it so you can't see it. Hide all your other watches and other instruments which tell you the time. So when you wake up in the morning, you jump out of bed, you don't know what time it is, you don't look at the clock and say, zippity-doo-dah, another wonderful day on holiday at the 5-star resort with a great teacher, meditation, whoopee, yeah! If you do that, you get energy. And then afterwards, once you're up, you look at the clock. 2 o'clock in the morning, no problem. Doesn't matter, you can always go to sleep again later on. But that way, you're not a prisoner of the clock. But sometimes that's like that, you know, you get up early in the morning, you're bright, you're fresh, meditate, you always go to bed later on. That's the best way of meditating, keeping it totally natural. So yeah, if you're really tired in the morning, you think, should I really come out and morning meditation? Don't. You can meditate later on. You can meditate, later on in the evening. If you're an evening person, meditate in the evening. If you're a morning person, meditate in the morning. So just keep it natural and don't force yourself. One of the great methods is when you wake up in the morning, you ask get up first of all, because if you're still in your bed, something about beds, it's not you're attached to the bed, the bed's attached to you, just won't let you get up. It keeps holding me. It's nothing to do with me, I'm trying to get out of bed, but the bed, the pillow keeps holding me. No, I'm not letting you get up. It's the pillow's fault, it's not my fault. So you jump out of bed, and then you sort of think, what time is it? So once you're out, you can make clear decisions. And the clear decision, I can get up, I feel good, I can just meditate. It doesn't really matter what time it is. And if you made a mistake, you meditate, maybe in your room, quarter of an hour, half an hour. Then if you realize, I got up too early, you can go back to bed again. Well, I do that, but then I was just thinking when I was saying that, jumping out of bed saying, simply do know, what a wonderful day, another day on the retreat, yeah. And it's only 2 o'clock in the morning. That really works if you're in a room by yourself. But I think your partner in the room would get very upset at you when you wake them up at 2 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing, simply do now at 2 o'clock in the morning? I hate you. I'm going to get another room. But you can see the point here, just getting up and getting some energy when you first wake up in the morning. That's really, really good. But no, if you really don't need to go for meditation, then don't. You can make up the time later on during the day. And also I heard somewhere the best time to meditate is between 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Is this true? How many of you have tried that? 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Now it really depends. If you're a night person, then great. One of the advantages of 11 p.m. to 1 o'clock in the morning is no one's awake, so it's nice and quiet. But yeah, that's a good time. But if you're really tired and half asleep, it's a hopeless time to meditate. So there is no special time when it's a good time to meditate. There's no bad time, no good time. Whatever time you feel, this is the time I want to meditate, then meditate. What's the best time to eat? It must be all the time, because I've seen you Singaporeans. 1 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, any time there's food there, it's a good time to eat. It's just whatever you feel you need to sort of meditate, you meditate. Gerardelli said that the food would taste better after good meditation. However, I've felt less appetite for the past few days. Does it mean that my meditation has not been good? Oh, it's good. All it means is you don't need so much food. Yeah, it still tastes nice, but you don't need so much to fill you up, because your car is not going so fast. It doesn't need so much petrol. So you don't need so much food when you don't do so much work. So none of you do very much at all. Me, I've got to keep eating to get my mouth moving all the time. So if you saw the amount of food which was piled on my plate this morning, that is corresponding to how much time I have to move my mouth, which is hour after hour after hour. So that's why it needs lubricating. So yeah, your meditation is still being good, you're just getting sensitive, that's all. So you don't need so much food. Last question. My friend said to me to have a pure 5 precepts, and I cannot sleep with my spouse, partner, no intimacy or no sexual activity. My friend said it is unwholesome, deluding, and not pure. Is that so? Please advise that it's not causing pressure and straining to my relationship. Of course it is, and I don't know who your friend is. But with friends like that. Now it's good to be pure in your 5 precepts, but don't be pure at the expense of compassion. So if you do break your precepts, don't be hard on yourself. Give yourself forgiveness. Because sometimes the pure becomes a puritans, and the puritans are just so uncompromising and so harsh. The first of the 5 precepts is not kidding, it's compassion. Please be kind to yourself. We're not just killing animals, not killing yourself either. So please be kind to yourself in your precepts. But they're saying here the extra precepts, not sleeping with your spouse, partner, no intimacy, no sexual activity. He said that is an unwholesome. Of course it's not unwholesome. The Buddha's encouraged that. It's very beautiful. That's restrained. Deluding are not pure. I don't know where they come from. They must have really a lot of addiction to sex. Very often it's sex, not pure. So, I don't know. We'll get into trouble for that here. So, if it's not causing pressure or strain in your relationship, just say 3 or 4 days. You can make up with it with your partner later on when the sort of retreat's over. But for 3 or 4 days, it's not that bad, having a bit of a strain. What do they say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Is that true? I don't know. What is one of the best sources is hunger. So, you know, just have no sexual relations for a little while, and then it gets much better afterwards. Give yourself a break. Then afterwards it'll be okay if you really want to get into that. But anyway, it's not unwholesome, it's not deluding, it's not impure. It's just what everybody does when they stay at a monastery. And some people stay in monasteries for weeks, for months, they have a wonderful time. And I couldn't really believe this, but who was it recently? They came for their honeymoon to stay at Jhanagrove for a couple of weeks. What a wonderful way of having a honeymoon. Weird, but they had a wonderful time. Anyway, that's what they did. So anyway, are there any more questions for the floor? Strange questions, weird questions. Okay, we started off with me eating too much food and finished off with my idea of sex. Please keep it to meditation. Okay, so for those of you sitting down a while like me, please, I'm going to get up and stretch. Stretch. I want to make a quick toilet break this time. Not an official one, unofficial toilet break. And it is, oh, it's 11:15, so we'll do 45 minutes, and then we can have lunch. I won't guide this meditation, just off you go, you know what to do by now. If you don't, then I'm lost. Please breathe in and out three times, counting them. And then with a third breath.